You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous. This is Shireen.
And this is Anna.
And today we have a very cool episode that was put together very last minute, but it was fucking great. And I'm so happy. Becca Ramos is joining us today. She's Anna's new
podcast producer extraordinaire. Yes. The new super producer of the Daily Zeitgeist show.
Yeah, it was really nice. And I got to know her better because I met her for the first time like an hour ago, which was great. This is how I get to know people, just record the conversation. Great. We talked about how she got into podcasting, her experience with applying to podcasting fellowships and initiatives like Anna's Next Up or Spotify's Wrapped Up or whatever that was called.
Wrapped Up, I think, is the 2021 like music thing.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Okay, well, guys, it doesn't matter. Whatever.
Who cares? Who fucking cares? The whole point is it's a great episode. She's really nice and enjoy.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi.
How's it going?
You know, it's going. I actually really love the weather today. It's kind of rainy and gloomy, and I feel the happiest when it looks the saddest. So I like today's weather. I'm like cozy inside.
Yeah, that's the most you thing you've ever said. I'm actually not surprised by this response at all.
I mean, it's not, I guess, I don't know, not in an emo way. I just like think it's like the sounds are nice and it smells better outside.
Oh, I didn't think of it as emo. I just thought it was like,
it is very Shireen. You're right though. But I would much rather like bundle up in a coat and a scarf versus like wear shorts and a tank top. You know, I just like, I want to be a cozy blob. That's all I want to be.
What's the German concept for comfort? Like the hygge?
Oh, that sounds so familiar.
Hygge or something like that. I don't know how to say it. I know it's like very like, is it Danish? It might be Danish. Did I say Swedish, Danish?
You said one German, of those. But it's probably something.
Did I say German? I meant Danish. Wow, good for me.
It's okay. So it's, I don't know if you'll hear this. I'm going to play it really quick.
Hygge. Okay. Hygge.
The quality of coziness and comfortable conviviality. I don't know what that word is, but it's a quality of coziness that engenders a feeling of contentment or well-being regarded as a defining characteristic of Danish culture. Wow.
There you go. Hygge.
Hygge.
And if you've ever been to Copenhagen, you know how like we in LA, and I don't know, maybe you guys in any other, you know, our guests would know probably in Brooklyn and any other like city that's like starting to get gentrified and trendy, like they have all these like general store type places where they'll charge you like, I don't know, give or take thousands of dollars for like a bowl, a ceramic bowl that's kinfolky. It's in a earth tone. So that, it feels like that concept originated in like Denmark, because when I was there in Copenhagen, it was like all that aesthetic, but it was like the seems like just a breath of air that like,
you don't even know it's a word.
No, it's the idea of comfort. So it feels like that aesthetic was like really big in Denmark, but I felt like, oh, like I think we, as we do as Americans, like suck the soul out of that and get made mm-hmm. it our thing to be like, here is a general store where you yeah. can find this candle.
We fuck up everything. We make it capitalist.
They're like, look at this candle in a chevron design. You're like, oh, God, I need that or my home will be disgusting.
Yeah, and, but you're completely right. The kinfolk vibe definitely originated in...
It's got vibes.
I'm going to stop. I have Danish friends and I need to
I do
stop
too.
Being offensive.
You know, I saw them in Denmark. What if I didn't know how to say it? Denmark. And there's no way they listen to this. But I apologize.
Actually, I had an uncle living in Denmark that I never met because he was exiled from Syria when my sister was born, my older sister, and he passed away without me, none of us ever meeting him. So that's sad. I always wanted to go and visit him, like have an excuse to go and stay there. Dramatic. Anyway, let's just bring on our guest. How about that? I'm going to shut up. Our guest today, actually, first time I've ever met her, talked to her, was about 20 minutes ago. I think Anna will do a better job introducing her. But I will stop now. Her name is Becca Ramos.
Ramos.
Oh, hello. Ramos, technically.
It's like you panicked. I felt like you panicked. Like, yeah, she knows how to say Ramos.
No, I mean, you'd be
every time.
So shocked how many people don't know how to say Ramos. I was born in LA, but I was raised in Texas and a Puerto Rican. Very confusing. But in the South, everyone will love to say anything but Ramos. It's like Ramos. Like they just like there's no like short A's, like it's all long A's.
Nice.
So yeah, my whole life it was like Miss Ramos.
Well, okay, Anna's right though. I do this thing where I panic like a second before I have to say something and I say it completely wrong. Like, there was one person's name, Dahlia. I every time I said it, I panicked and said it differently. So I apologize. I know how to say Ramos. I'm just a moron.
It is okay. No, when y'all were talking about the Denmark thing, it reminded me of, yes, I live in Brooklyn right now, but I also lived in Portland for like 3 years.
Ooh, there you go.
Portland.
And so many things are like that. So they love, there's this place called Woonwinkle.
Mm-hmm. And that sounds
it
right.
It is just like an interior design shop of like squiggly, you know, that like kind of squiggly mm-hmm. line movement.
Yeah.
And it's just like those like terracotta clay mm-hmm. like things with like wiggle lines. Yeah. Then there was this shop here in Brooklyn that I passed by the other day in like, I think Greenpoint. And it was, I think, like a like Denmark or like some European like shop. Mm-hmm. And they had all these crazy like weed pipes and things. Mm-hmm. But they were so expensive. It was like, why is this pipe $70? Like, wow. It's like shaped like a little staircase, but it's beautiful. I was like, oh my God, am I about to like smoke flower now? Like all I buy is pre-rolls, but now am I about to start smoking flower just to get this seashell grinder with this like stair step pipe?
Yeah. That's how those
sounds beautiful.
It's beautiful, but the whole set was like $140 for like the grinder, the pipe, and then like the cute little cow like Zippo lighter. And I was like, I can't do this.
I mean, that's how they get you. They're like, it's so cute. And don't you want this to be you, who you are? And it's like, yeah, but...
Don't you want to be a person that owns this?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, this is the type of having my life together that I want to exude. But in reality, I'm smoking because I don't have it together. So
exactly. Wow, exactly. Anna, do you want to tell us all how Becca came to us?
Yeah, so Becca... Ramos.
Okay, I know how to say Ramos.
I'm just joking. I don't know. It's funny to say it weird, like some
funny.
Weird, strange person.
I panic.
Becca Ramos.
But my sister's name is R-A-M-E-E. It's Ramey. So maybe that was part
of it. Yeah, it's probably, you know? It. You hear Ray.
Yeah.
I forgive everyone that isn't white. You know what I'm saying?
Like, oh my God, thank you so much.
Yeah. Like, everyone who's not white gets grace. That's how it is. There's different cultural barriers. Like,
thank you, Becca.
Different alphabets.
Yeah, so Becca and I met when she interviewed... Are your pronouns she, her? I've never asked.
They are. My pronouns are she, her.
Okay, Jesus Christ.
Good to
know. I should
know.
Have
Good
asked that
know.
Like day one. As soon as I said it, I was like, you've never asked. And I'm a fool. I'm sorry about that. Okay, just to confirm, she, her. Okay, sorry. Guys, you gotta ask. Because if you don't know...
You gotta ask.
Just ask. It's that simple. Yeah. Don't be ashamed. Just ask. I think we need to normalize that more. If you don't know, just ask. I think people panic.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I met Becca when she interviewed for Next Up. And I was like, She doesn't need this. She's too advanced. She knows what she's doing. And not that I'm saying that people I picked were like, I was like, they need this. But there was a certain type of person who I thought could really, whatever, learn a lot in this program. And I believe you were a level above that. And I was like, she knows too much. She knows too much. She can't come in. But I was like, well, Becca's great. And we stayed in touch and we kept talking. And, you know, I finally got approval to start my own team at iHeart, which has been a long time coming because I've been doing multiple jobs to survive at this company to get things done. I always knew I was going to hire Becca. I didn't tell you directly, but I knew deep down. I was working on getting you in. Yeah. And you always said you wanted to get into podcasting. And I was like, I don't need to be one of those people that's like, you weren't able to learn everything that was not in your ability to learn before you met me. You know, like podcasting is a really weird wild west of a situation where there's so much gatekeeping within this, like, really somewhat, in my opinion, kind of dumb industry.
Yeah. It objectively is really dumb.
For how much we're all like, podcasting. I'm like, go fuck yourself.
And so many people have, anybody in theory can start a podcast. Like, the barrier of entry into, like, the, you know, uploading it yourself world is the bars on the floor, you know?
Exactly.
But yet, to actually, like, get a podcast to be successful or get signed onto a network, it's much like Hollywood and entertainment where it's very hard to get through.
Yeah. And then, you know what? Editing programs like Pro Tools and Audition are not really that accessible. And you have to, like, learn how to use it. And, you know, people take advantage of these situations and upcharge a lot. So I was like, whatever. I don't care what you know. I just like you. You seem like a hard worker. You've already done more work than I could have even expected from you, just organizing everything for TDZ. You know, when you just see a woman of color and you're like, oh, she'll do the work. Not like these fucks we keep hiring with cool shoes. She'll actually do the work. And that's what I want.
Most women of color. I'm like, they got it.
And I saw it. When I took one look at you and I looked into your soul, deep into your soul, I was like, oh, she'll do the fucking work. And that's what I wanted. And so once I was given the ability to hire whoever I wanted, I was like, well, Becca, come on down. And so that's why Becca's here. We got her in the door. And she is a producer here at iHeart.
She'll be helping us out too.
She got forced into guesting on this podcast episode.
Genuinely, yes.
Honestly, I'm very appreciative. I'm glad you have me.
Yeah, we were originally going to talk about Thanksgiving on December 9th, but Becca was there and I was like, Becca should be our guest. Also, I mentioned this, like, I just wanted to ask you questions. And so I thought we might as well record it. You know, I want to get to know you. Let's just record that process.
Yep.
Anna probably knows more about this than I do, but what were you doing before podcasting?
Yeah, so I kind of done a lot of weird things. I came from the advertising industry. I started my career at Wieden and Kennedy, and it's kind of one of those things where if you're not in advertising, you probably don't know, but if you're in advertising, it's like a big deal. They are the biggest independent agency and like one of the oldest independent agencies. They do Nike, KFC, mm-hmm. Old Spice, like a lot of probably ads that you're like, wow, that was funny or interesting. They've probably done it. And most famously, they do all the Nike work. I did not touch the Nike work. I was famously on KFC. So if you saw Virtual Colonel, who, you know, had weird deals with Old Spice and also other virtual influencers. If you saw him DJ at Ultra Music Festival.
What?
If you played the Steam game, I think it's I Love You, Colonel Sanders. I'm really bad at video games, but it's the video game, Google it, of Colonel Sanders. Like, I was on all those projects. I produced all those projects. So that's my infamy. Also, if you DM'd KFC, I probably responded to you or saw it.
Oh my gosh.
So I was
You're
queen.
The Colonel?
I was the Colonel at one point, you know.
Were you ghostwriting for him?
Believe it or not, the Colonel is a woman of color.
I mean, it makes sense because behind every old white man is a woman of color doing all the work.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I was doing that for a while, but also at Wieden, it's a really interesting, special place where they'll let you kind of do whatever you want. Like, they'll support your weird ventures. And so I got to run a podcast there, actually, called Anchigos. And it was this woman of color travel platform we had built. The founders, Sarita and Rebecca, they're super talented. They did a bunch of really cool stuff before they came to Wieden. But they basically founded it to kind of show, like do a case study of how to like build up an audience, like a micro audience. Mm-hmm. And they ended up like blowing up the podcast. And I was actually nominated, I think, in 2018 for like Travel Podcast of the Year by iHeart, which was like,
wow,
super dope. But we toured with that. Like we would go to, you know, different events and do live podcasts. And then I also ran this like Latinx podcast there because I ran the Latinx Affinity Group and I put on a whole like gallery and like event, like a month of programming for like the Latinx like folks of Portland and of Wyden. And that was a lot of fun. I loved all those things. But then I thought for some strange reason, I wanted to be a strategist. Don't ever be a strategist. And then I took a job doing that. And then I was like, nope. And then I was like, I want to be a producer. I want to get back into this podcasting thing. Like that's what I really loved. Took a job as a producer at this other small shop based in LA called Frank. And then I, you know, had applied for like two different podcasting fellowships. Before Next Up, I applied for Spotify's and I didn't get it the year before. And Next Up, I was like so stoked. Actually, it was kind of funny. I was listening to Daily Zeitgeist and I heard Anna promote it. And I was like, oh my God, this is my dream. And I applied. Because it was like, there's only 5 days that you have to apply for this. And I'm like killing myself applying for this. And I was like, and so to be here, to have manifested that from like, what, that was July to now is like pretty dope. So super exciting. Yeah,
unfortunately, you didn't make it, but you made it in my heart.
I made it to iHeart. So like, yeah. It all worked out. Because to me, it wasn't about making the episodes. I really wanted to be a producer. Like I was like, I just want to be in podcasting. Like I was like, I'll make my own podcast whenever I have an idea. I love it. I will get there. But it was way more important for me to become a producer and actually like be a podcaster than it was to like make episodes and shop around. So
that's what I saw in you. I was like, you don't need this program specifically.
Yeah.
Like this program you could do with your eyes closed. That's what I was like. That's the thing is like, I took a look at you and I was like, I know you want in this, but you don't need this.
Yeah.
So I would rather just try and bring you in outside of this and just get you in the door, which is like kind of like selfishly, like I only left it open for a week because I knew bandwidth wise, I wouldn't be able to give everyone's application
thorough look.
Yeah. Like that it deserved for even applying. So I was like, if a week, then maybe like, you know, cap at like 200 applications and then I can go through that, which in itself, oh my God, I had to go to Rhode Island for a week just to go through application. I'm not even joking. I went to Rhode Island and literally sat at my friend's parents' house and looked at applications for a week.
I'm sure, read through everything. Everyone, I'm sure, put their heart and soul into it. I know I did. So I can't imagine everybody else who applied didn't also want to do all that. So
that's why I did a week. And then I, you know, went through and then I had to narrow about 200 people down to 20. And I was supposed to narrow it down to 6, but then I couldn't because I like got too emotionally invested in people's stories that I asked if I could add 2 more people to the group. And they let me, luckily, thank iHeart for, you know, letting me do that. But then there were people like you who I'd interviewed in my narrowed down to 20 that I then was just like, well, this person doesn't need us, but I wanted to get to know them because I could feel you would be a good person to bring in in the long run to maintain that, you know, just maintain that relationship.
Yeah. Because when I didn't get it, I was like, oh my God, I was devastated. So I had to reach out to Anna. I was like, what do I need to do? I was like, I want to work for you. Like, how do I get there? Luckily, Anna and I had the same vision.
Yeah.
We were parallel pathing a little bit. So
I love that you manifested this. I don't know what the cliche saying is, but it's about like, even your failures will open doors for something, you know? Like, not failures, you know, it's a dramatic word. But like, you don't even know, like, if you don't get that, there's something better for you coming probably. And you just have to like, believe in that. And I, maybe like, that sounds like so woo-woo, but...
No, I'm very much in the camp of everything happens for a reason. And I, like, definitely didn't get the Spotify one. And when Anna created this program, I was like, oh, this is, like, everything I, like, believe in. Because the Spotify one was interesting, to say the least, applying for it. And it didn't feel as genuine, to put it kindly, about it.
I'm glad you said that because it did seem a little performative from the outside. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to know that as an applicant that you felt that way. So.
Yes. And it felt like, you know, I felt what I really loved when I applied for Next Up was the genuineness of like, hey, if you don't make it, we promise to like burn all your stuff. Like, we're not going to take your ideas, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas the in-depthness of the Spotify application and the lack of guarantee that they're not going to steal your intellectual property felt very scummy, to say the least. And because that one was so in-depth, it was like, I need you to give me a run of show. I need you to give me like full-fleshed ideas as to like, not even just like a blurb of what the podcast is about, but I need episode ideas. I need structure. I need guests. Like, who do you want to guest for it? Like, I need topics, all sorts of things. Like, it was like very much like if you handed this to someone, they could make a show right now.
Wow.
And
what a scam.
Yeah. And it was so funny because the last question on the application, it always sticks with me. It was like, what do you believe as a woman of color, non-binary person of color, is the barrier of entry for podcasting or like the biggest issue that you people have with podcasting industry? And I had mentioned like stolen IP because it's been something I experienced in the past and maybe not stolen, but definitely not like, oh, I can take my idea and like bring it somewhere else. Like they have it.
Right.
And then like a week later, Vulture released this article about Spotify stealing POC creators' IP of like podcasts that they own. And then I didn't get into the program and I was like, I was like, it's the lines. They just keep connecting. Crazy.
That's interesting. Yeah. See, that thing is like, I didn't want my program to be that. I wanted my program to be like, you had a thought and you, it's a good idea. And you've always wanted to make a podcast, but no one would let you. So it's like, to me, I was like, I don't need to hear everything you've ever thought about a podcast. Just let me know some pitches you would like to put into fruition. Because I do think a part of the program is the development of it.
Yeah.
I want to help you develop a show and then give you every single possible tool you can to develop the show and get you literally a foot in the door, because like 6 months ago, you might not have even looked at Adobe Audition, but now you can actively put it on your resume. And that in itself bumps you up to another level of someone who can be hired as a podcaster or hired as like an audio person, whatever realm you want to work. Now you own a mic that you didn't have to pay for, because I went in there and pushed for an aggro budget that went back and forth a few times, but you know, still like got everything I wanted in the program, which I will shout out iHeart for not pushing back very much at all for how much I wanted to do. And my whole thing was like, yeah, you know, it is kind of a give and take. You are working with a giant corporate company that pays your bills. But then it's like, if I can get all of this out of them, then it's worth it for whoever gets to come into this program and take advantage of that. Because that's all you want. I just want to get people in the door and not make it a whole thing of like, well, prove to me you deserve to be here. Episode structure. It's like, no,
but I think you're also coming at it from someone that has a podcast and understands the importance of someone's IP, you know? Like, I remember in the beginning when you and I were like looking at the contracts to sign at the first company or whatever and transferring it over. I think you understand the anxiety of like a creative person that like we made something together, you know? And I think that also helps you, because when you made the application, you probably didn't even think about that as like a, like something that you wanted, because that's not what you have what would have wanted kind of thing.
Yeah. And shout out to Joelle, who actually got made sure everything that was submitted to us was destroyed. Because there was some tension where I was like, I don't know whose hands this is getting into at the company. So we were kind of like aggro about it a little, maybe to a point of our own like potential of causing issues for ourselves of like nobody sees this but us. Look, I was told everything was destroyed. Let's goddamn hope it was, because
you did
I've
your
got
best.
Emails.
And that's the point. You did the utmost you could do, which is probably more than I would say about, you know, the wrapped up program at Spotify.
Yeah.
So,
to say the least. Yeah.
To say the least. We're not there, so.
No, we're not there. No, we just, a bird told us, you know, just, that's fine. Let's take our first break. And when we get back, we'll get to know you, baby Becca. Baby Becca. We'll be right back.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we are back with Becca. We flipped it around today. We got to know you, the most recent stuff that happened and your work. But now we're going to rewind. Tell us where you grew up and where you were born and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I was actually born in LA. My parents, I feel like it's like kind of like a spider web, a little bit of my family tree. It's like I'm 100% Puerto Rican, but I'm the only Puerto Rican in Texas, I feel like. Or I was. I'm not in Texas anymore. But I was born in Los Angeles, and then I moved to Texas when I was like two or three. And then I grew up in Texas. I went to college in Texas. Mm. I was in the sunken place for a long time. And then I moved to Portland, Oregon, and surprisingly got out of the sunken place in the whitest city in America. But mom is born and raised in Puerto Rico and then moved to California and then was forced to move to Texas. And that's where she met my dad, who was also forced to move to Texas. He was born in New York, raised in LA, like very
what
much
do you
a
mean
California
by forced?
Dude.
Yeah, what does that mean?
My grandmother was like having a field day with my aunt. There's some drama there. And basically she was like, we're moving to Texas. Her, my grandfather, they're like, we're moving to Texas. We're leaving your sister behind, which was, mind you, in her 20s, like she's not a baby or anything, mm-hmm. and like leave a child. But they were like, we have to get out of California. California's toxic for us. And so they somehow ended up in Texas and they made my dad like move them. Like they were like, we need your help. It's your job, middle child syndrome. Like mm-hmm. you're in charge of fixing everything. And so my dad like packed up their house in LA and helped them move to Texas. And because there's no Puerto Ricans in Texas, somehow my mom's family knew my dad's family. And they, mm-hmm. my parents met at like a Christmas party when they were young. And my grandmother was like, oh my God, you should meet my son. He's so wonderful, blah, blah, blah. My mom was like, okay, whatever. Like, sure. And then somehow they got together. But when they got married, they were like, we both hate Texas. Like, we both, like, reluctantly ended up here. So let's move back to California. Like, we miss California. Let's go. So they spent, I think, the first 10 years of their marriage in California. And then after they had us, it was just, like, not economically feasible for them. Like, my mom didn't finish school until, like, I was, like, in second grade. And my dad barely finished school when my brother, like, was born. And so they just, like, California's expensive. And like for the life they wanted to give us, they were just like, we cannot do this in California. It's just like not possible. So they moved us back to Texas. And then we were stuck there forever until I got out. But
you were forced to go there too.
I was forced to go there too. I definitely hated it. It was definitely a weird, I didn't realize how much I hated it until I like left. Because it's like, I think that thing that like POC who grew up in white spaces, you're like, oh, I'm ugly. And then you realize, mm-hmm. no, I'm just ugly for this white space that I'm mm-hmm. occupying. Absolutely. Yeah. So I just like, I internalized so many things. And it wasn't until I like found a community of color that I was like, oh, I'm a normal person. Like I can find people that like are like me, that enjoy similar things to me, that are actually like kind to me and not microaggressing me now that I know what that means. And I'm never going back is the moral of the story. I'm not going back to Texas. I go for the holidays and then I'm gone.
Well, now you reroute to LA.
Yeah, you know, I see in the horizon, my parents told me, they were like, we have one more move in us and, you know, we really want to go back to California. So like, make it happen. I'm like, yeah. Hey, okay, say less.
Yeah. Well, wait. did I skip how you ended up in New York?
Oh, no, you didn't skip it. So after college, I basically applied for this program. It's called MAPE, if you ever heard of it. It's the Multicultural Advertising Intern Program. And it is this advertising fellowship for students of color. Huh. And it's really awesome. I like gratitude to my whole career to MAPE because I wouldn't be literally sitting here today if I didn't get into MAPE. And basically, it's this program you can apply for. It's really kind of scary, like the NFL draft. You have like, I don't know, 6 essays, a video, 3 letters of recommendation, your website, your portfolio, your resume, like all these things. And you apply, you do an interview, and then you get in. And it's like 100, at my time that I did it, it was like 100 kids get into it, but not every kid gets accepted because it's like all these ad agencies then pick who they want.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, it's really dependent on if you get picked. And I got picked by Wyden, which at the time I knew so little about advertising. I was like, okay, cool. I get to move to Portland. I had no idea what I was walking into.
They're one of the big dogs. Every Super Bowl commercial I've worked has been by them. You know, like they are intense.
They are very intense. It's very star striking to like go when you like came from nothing. Like my family didn't have money. Mom's a teacher. My dad's like an insurance adjuster for Progressive. And then I went to private school where I was like, oh, I really have nothing because like I went to Baylor and all these kids are just trust fund kids who are going to be investment bankers or doctors. And then I go here and it's like, whoa, I'm meeting celebrities. I also get to just like live in this fun house. Like Wyden's office is like featured on Portlandia. Like it is a fun house. It is a very jarring experience from like Southern niceties. But when I left Wyden, I took a job in New York, still in advertising. I was a strategist and at this like smaller shop called VCCP and took the job. And then COVID hit. I took it actually January 2020.
Oh, it's so interesting that like the decisions we made in like January and February of 2020 really set us up for the rest of these 2 years. You know, like we didn't even realize.
No idea. It was like, it was so funny because I remember I landed here January 6th. And then I ended up having to go home for like a family emergency like that first week of March, like when the COVID news started to kind of bubble, but we hadn't like fully accepted it in our hearts that like this was the end of the end. And I was stuck in Texas and my parents were like, oh my God, do you go back? Like I truly brought like, I was supposed to be gone for the weekend. I brought like all black. I was there for a funeral. Like I brought just the bare minimum. And then all of a sudden it's like lockdown. New York is shutting everything down. Like you like can't leave your apartment. Like the subways are shut down. And I had to make the hard decision on if I'm going to stay in Texas and just like say goodbye to my apartment in New York and never go back. Or do I tough it out in New York? And I was like, Texas sucks. I'm toughing it out in New York. And it was scary. You kind of forget how dystopic it was at the beginning. Yeah. Like
it was. Remember the toilet paper shit? Like, come on. The grocery stores were like a zombie apocalypse. I still hate anyone that hoarded shit. Like, why? Why?
Well, it was like scary in New York in like a unique sense because it was like you could feel the death in the air, which is really foreboding to say. Oh. But it was just like the city was quiet. Everything was shut down. Like all you're seeing on the news. I remember I had like a panic attack. Like I had to take like a mental health day from work because I was like, I keep reading the New York Times every morning, like the little email summary. I didn't even have a subscription, just like that email newsletter they send out, the Morning Brew. Every day there's like hundreds of thousands more people died in New York City alone. You know, it's like I'm hearing ambulances all down my street like every day. It's like, and I lived on a busy street. I live on a much quieter one now, but it was very like, it felt like you were in, what's that movie? I Am Legend with Will Smith. Yeah, it was just very, until like summer and then everyone was like, but it's warm outside so we can just be outside and forget COVID exists.
It was really fascinating. All of it is just how we reacted and how where we've gone and what, I don't even know. The toilet paper stuff is really dark, but
you forget that stuff happened. I mean, you know what I mean? You forget just like how bizarre everything was for a long time. I think it's like us repressing it and like putting it way down because it's like a group trauma we all experience, a collective trauma.
Right. Truly. I forget how those months felt at the beginning, but I had really lovely roommates. I think had I not had my roommates, I probably would have, I don't know what I would have done. But we were able to somehow not kill each other. None of us really knew each other very well before the pandemic, but then we became like the best of friends. And it was
really,
lovely, and we built some community and we made friends and we, you know, got tested every other week because we were so scared to be on the subway. But yeah, it's so, and now here I am in my permanent work from home desk that I for 8 months protested buying because I didn't believe that this was going to be the rest of our lives. But now I have a full blown setup that I never thought I would need.
I know. God. I just like have stopped putting clothes away. Mm-hmm. I don't really, I just like have, there's no reason for anything. I'm like, whatever.
I wear the same thing anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine.
Yeah. We don't need anything. I think we've also learned we can live without a lot of things.
Yeah, it's a humbling thing. I mean, like, also, that reminds me, like, I have to do another, like, big purge, I think, because I did one when I moved, and I went a little bit overboard with some shopping recently because I was feeling manic. Another topic, another day. But I have to do it again because, you're right, like, I haven't worn the majority of my clothes because I just don't wear them, or even just other things. Like, I don't know, whatever. It's a whole thing. But Becca, back to you. So did you went into college knowing you wanted to go into some type of like advertising stuff or?
No, I would say probably the past decade of my life has been a big question mark of like, what is she going to do next? I feel like I had the syndrome growing up in Texas. It's all oil money, right? Like I grew up in Houston specifically, big oil money. And I, growing to public school in Texas, most kids wanted to be an engineer. Mm. They want to be a doctor, or they want to work in business, finance, whatever that means. And I never wanted to do any of those things. I truly was like, I have no idea. I thought I wanted to go to NYU, but I had no idea what jobs looked like. I just knew I didn't want to be an engineer, I didn't want to be a doctor, and I didn't want to work in business. So where does that leave me? My brother, he went to school for engineering. He was very like, I like math, I'm good at this thing, cool. And my parents were like, that's awesome, we're brown, this is something we can digest, this is great. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll go to school for psychology because that's like adjacent to like doctor,
science
but I feel like I'll enjoy it more. And so my first year, I did that. I hated it. I was like,
really?
Neuroscience was so interesting, but so hard. And I was like, I can't do this. So I was like, what do I possibly do? So I changed my major to PR. And my dad was so mad at me because he was like, I can't comprehend what that means. Like to him, like doctor, lawyer, business, engineering, I can comprehend and I know you'll be employable. But PR, how am I supposed to trust that you're employable? I was like, I'm going to prove you wrong because that's what I do all the time. And so I switched to PR, hated it. So I switched to journalism, like journalism, new media, which was the advertising track at Baylor, but it was brand new. Even then, I still was like, I just want to get out of Texas. I was like, my only goal was like move out of Texas. Don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to move. And then when I literally Googled advertising fellowships, because I had a teacher basically pull me aside and was like, hey, there's like these diversity fellowships that you can apply for because you are not
diverse.
White.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they were so afraid to say that to me. And I was like, oh, cool. I can do something because I'm brown. Awesome. And I was just like, let me figure this out. And
this is the one helpful thing you've told me. Thank you.
Yeah. I was like, I want a job out of Texas. And they were like, why? Like, we can get you a job at like Weber Shandwick Dallas. And I'm like, I don't want to live here.
All these ad names you keep saying, I'm like, what?
They're a nightmare. Weber Shandwick was like a big PR agency. And I was like, I don't even want to do PR. Like, why are you doing this to me? And so I was like, I need to get out of here. So then I found that the advertising fellowship. And then the rest was history. And I was like, oh, thank God. But I had no idea. Even when I was at Wyden, I had this very non-traditional track because I was in this publishing department and it turned into WK Studios, it turned into Creator Studios. But at the time, they're basically trying to pitch like television shows. They're trying to be like an extension of Hollywood without being in LA. Like we produced like Portugal the Man music videos and we would do a lot of like the fun, odd jobs that like the other, like for less money than like the actual production department would do it. Like we were basically like trying to like cut corners and like do really fun digital things that production didn't want to take on because their bill is like too expensive to take on because they did most things in-house. After I stopped being able to do a lot of stuff in that department because it was so like startup vibes. Like everybody there was like super senior and I was like the most junior person. And they were like, well, we don't have time to teach you anything. So you have to go take a traditional job in the agency because like
you're not going to get any further. And I was like, okay. So that's when I got on KFC and I started doing like all that other extra stuff that I was still doing on Chigo's, you know, and I was running the Latinx group and I loved all those things. I was like, okay, how do I make this my job? Like KFC is KFC and it's like great experience and like important. You know, it's one of the most strong accounts in the building at the time, but I want to produce podcasts. I want to produce events. I want to do more like community-centric work. I want to do more things that involve people of color. I don't want to be doing traditional advertising. And then it's been a long-winded journey to figure that out since. And I finally feel like I've made headway into getting closer to that.
100%.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Inspiring. Inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's take our second break while we're mulling that over. Let's just marinate in the inspiration. We'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we're back
with
Becca Ramos.
Ooh. Ramos.
I said that.
You got it.
Right.
You did.
See,
it.
This is the panicking part where like I say it and I know it's right, but because I got it wrong before, I think everything I say is wrong now. You know what I mean?
No, you like, got it. Feel good. Take a deep breath. You got it.
I just need... Like, I was working earlier today, and I was mispronouncing everything. And I was doing that thing. I was, like, reading stuff out loud to someone. And I was saying K instead of C. I was saying G instead of J. It's like my Arab brain taking over because I learned English second. And all those things are the same to me. And it just, from the outside, I look very stupid because they're like, why are you having trouble saying this one thing?
I feel like... anybody who has learned English as their second language, no one can say anything. Because you know what? I dream of speaking a second language, okay? I have been actively trying to learn Spanish the past year. Okay, actively. I've been actively trying to learn Spanish the past year. It was robbed of me as a youth because I grew up in a very racist state. And my parents had to make the hard decision of, do we teach her Spanish? Or does she end up in regular classes or learn Spanish? And my parents chose, you know, saving my education, which meant I didn't get a piece of my culture. So I'm like, anybody who speaks a second language, I'm like, good for you. You shouldn't have even had to learn English. English is such a stupid language.
Yeah.
And I wish I spoke Spanish. I've been trying really hard this year, but it's been tough.
Yeah, I believe in you. I think if you go to Puerto Rico or any Spanish-speaking country, I think like, that's when you learn the most.
So funny thing with Puerto Rico. I went with my mom this summer. And it was like this beautiful like mother-daughter bonding trip that we had planned in the pandemic. Like we planned it 2019 to do it 2020, obviously COVID. So then we did it 2021. My mom hadn't been back in years. Like, I think since like we last went back, which was the first time I ever went to Puerto Rico, which was like 11 years ago. So it was like very exciting.
Right. We and talked to you when you were there.
Yeah. Anna interviewed me while I was in Puerto Rico. I was so nervous. And it was beautiful. But in Puerto Rico, because they are such a tourist place and owned by the, you know, United States, if they can sense that you don't speak good Spanish, they will just, out of anger, speak to you in English. They won't entertain you. Like, you have to bully them into like practicing with you. You have to be like, I'm going to speak Spanish, which I'm just not that person. I get so anxious speaking Spanish already. Like, I freeze up. That is like my trauma with the language. I'm just like, even though I probably, if I took a shot and like took a breath, I would be fine. I freeze up if I'm sober. And my mom, when they could sense my mom spoke English, they would even speak to her in English, which is crazy because like my mom's fluent in Spanish and she would just like switch between English and Spanish because that's just like what she's used to now being in the States for so long. But they would just like then speak to her in English because they're like, ugh, you're an American. And it's so, you have to go to like a real Latin American, not that Puerto Rico is very much a real Latin American country before I get canceled. Puerto Rico is a real Latin American country, but you have to go somewhere I think that doesn't speak English. Like you have to go to like Peru or like Colombia, somewhere where they're just like not even going to entertain your English. Like they're just like, sorry. Like we, like,
yo no sé. I want to go to South America so bad anyway, so I actually got to make that happen. But yeah, it's interesting. I think it is a very tough decision that I don't think parents realize will affect the rest of their child's life. You know, like I'm really grateful that I learned Arabic and that I'm fluent in it. But I will say, me and my older sister, we were told to get put into ESL classes, English as second language classes. And my mom was pissed because we were also engaged this like stupid overachiever gifted thing, which is so stupid in retrospect. But at the time, my parents were so proud of their little immigrant kids. We knew English. We just had a little bit of an accent, you know, and a very white place and everything. But yeah, it's never too late to learn anything. I'm trying to teach myself a bunch of stuff and it's really fucking hard, but at least we're trying.
At least we're trying. I did this program called Spanish en Pena. So like Spanish without pain is like the, you know, loose translation, but it was really cool. I did it over January through April. It was like their winter session, but their whole thing is creating an environment that we as like Latinos who grew up in this like kind of third culture, like you grew up in like an immigrant home or like, you know, just like a very Latino home, but you grew up in a very white space and you just like didn't have access to speaking and learning Spanish. And to kind of democratize it, because there's a lot of shame, I think, for those of us who are trying, because it's shame within our own community. Like our own community looks down on us like, why didn't you learn it? And then you just like feel scared. So it like approaches it from a very like, this is about progress and that this is like a journey for the rest of your life. This isn't, you're not going to learn Spanish in a week. You're not going to learn it in the 3 months that you have it in this program, but we're giving you the tools to continue to practice and like really give you ability to master this over your lifetime. And it was awesome. It wasn't for me the whole way. Like I think the group, it was like a big Zoom class, like of like 80 to 100 people. And then you did the small groups and I loved the small groups. That was like really beneficial for me. But the big lecture class, I've never been able to learn that way. Like I went to private school for a reason for college. I just like that classroom size, especially on Zoom, was really tough. So I didn't end up like re-upping with the program, but I think it's a great resource for those who are still looking for like a way to learn Spanish. Yeah. And it's like purposely like only Latinos or like people who are like, I married like someone who is brown, you know, like they try to keep it like within the home, within the community. So no one feels like, you know, they're being encroached upon and that, you know, it's a safe space, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried Duolingo?
So I have. I have like the little app and the owl always yells at me. Yeah. I feel like for that, my biggest issue is I took Spanish like high school, college. Like I have very good base level like grammar and pronunciation and like vocabulary. But Duolingo, I think is like what I need at the end of the day is speaking. Like I have to, I need to practice actually saying things. And Duolingo is just like, oh, of course I know the answer to this. I took enough Spanish classes to like get through Duolingo. Hopefully the bird doesn't come for me on TikTok or something. That's, but
I like that you said he yells at you because it is very abrasive. But like, for example, I have like This is not a humble brag. I just think it's like stupid. I have like over a 400-day streak and someone talked to me, but someone talked to me in Spanish yesterday and I froze. Like, what's the fucking point? What is the point? Like, I haven't learned shit. Like, it doesn't matter.
Well, that's the issue with a lot of those like apps and things is that it is so like vocabulary. It's like why learning a language in school doesn't work either. Like, I took Spanish in middle school, high school, and college. And my mom is also a Spanish teacher. So, you know, you'd think by now I would have mastered this, but no, the way they teach it in school is very much like reading and writing based, which is how American English is taught. And that is like the crux, because the reality is when you're learning to speak a language, reading and writing it is not nearly as important as actually having conversational Spanish. And so you learn this very formal Spanish, which is how you learn it in Duolingo. Like, you're learning vocabulary, you're learning like all of these tenses and like conversions.
In Arabic too. Arabic, so there's a type of Arabic called Fusha, which is like the overarching, there are so many dialects of Arabic, but Fusha is like this like overarching like newscaster, whatever kind of Arabic. And that's what they teach you like on Duolingo. It's very, very formal and no one really speaks like that.
No one speaks like
so
that.
So it's just kind of interesting. And but you're right. I think talking to someone in person makes the biggest difference.
Yeah.
And I know I talk about this all the time, but it's only because it changed my life. I went to Russia in 2016 and my friend was living over there who was Russian. And I was teaching myself on Duolingo before I left. And being there was completely different. Like, we were just, she was talking to me in Russian. I was trying to teach her Arabic, like, but in return or whatever.
Yeah.
And by the time I left, I felt like I could kind of pass. Like, you know, like, and I think it helps that Arabic and Russian kind of have a similar way you use your mouth. Or I feel like the accent is kind of similar. Which I didn't realize until I started to learn. But I just want to go back so I can get better. I want to go anywhere so I can get better.
I think it's very much that fight or flight instinct too. Because like when I am given the option to like speak English, I will default. Like, I will fold immediately. I'm like, ugh.
Exactly.
But when you are in an area where like they will not, like I, for instance, I volunteer at this bookstore in Bushwick called Mil Mundos. And they are like a radical activist Latinx like space where they do a lot of mutual aid work out of there. And they sell like Spanish and English books and they teach Spanish classes. And it's just like a really awesome community space for Latinos in Brooklyn, as like the area is very quickly gentrifying, but like that area is predominantly like Puerto Rican, Dominican, like it is a Latino area. And when I'm doing mutual aid work there, I'm like running the shop on the weekends. Sometimes people will come for donations and they don't speak English. And I have to like really like tap in and be like, I have to tell them something because they're asking for diapers and I have to figure out how to respond. And that's the only time that I'm able to like get it out. But if I'm like with my mom, I give up like so quick. Cause she'll she's my mom, she'll fold too. She don't want to make me uncomfortable. Yeah. So she's just like, okay, Becca.
That's a good point.
I was raised speaking Farsi and I had, and this is to a point you guys said earlier, like I had a lot of kind of like anger over my parents being like, speak Farsi in the house. Me being like, God, I just want to live, you know? But I think that has helped me a lot because now like I know Farsi and it stayed with me. I will say the writing has not stayed with me because I used to take writing classes as a child and it got good and now it's bad again because I was like reading this sign on the wall and I was like, I can't really remember these characters anymore. But I say like when I go to Iran, like I get to a point where I'm like thinking in Farsi. Like I get so immersed in it. And I've actually been taking Turkish on Duolingo because I want my Turkish to get better so I can talk to my dad's side of the family who doesn't even speak Turkish. They speak an Azeri Turkish, but Azeri Turkish is not a written language, so it's not taught anywhere. So I'm learning Istanbuli Turkish to get as close as I can to that Turkish because there's a lot of like overlap.
Mm-hmm. How would you learn it? Would you just have to be there to like learn
which
that
when
dialect?
I'm there? Yeah. So when I'm there, like I would have to just speak Turkish with them, pick up on what the dialect is different. And my dad speaks it every day. And like literally all my family goes, you want to learn Azeri Turkish, talk to your dad. And it's like, yeah, but have you ever tried to get my dad on the phone? Like, so, and also like, as soon as I get him on the phone, he's like complaining to me about something I should have been doing. And I'm like,
that's not what I was here for.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to like sit down with your dad and be like, let's speak Azeri Turkish so I can get better at it. There's just no real like good, easy way to do it. Cause my dad's like, one, he's like, I'm at the gym. And I'm like, okay. Or he's like, I'm at my friend's house. Or he's like, just in the garden, like he's always just doing something. So it's hard to like, you know, really sit down and learn with him. But I'm hoping I can get better at it by learning this. I'm doing Turkish on Duolingo, seeing if that'll work. But I agree. It's like, unless I'm in it, it's hard to learn. Like, you have to be thrown in it. And there is kind of like that fear factor of being so deeply immersed that you have no choice but to like do your best. And I think that's when you learn, you know, there has to be some sort of pressure angle. Or if, you know, like with my parents, like with my dad, I can very easily switch to Farsi or English and he's not going to fight it because he's just like, he's not that invested, you know, he's just like, whatever.
Yeah. I totally relate to starting to think in Arabic though. Like there are some words I think about in Arabic all the time just because there's no English way to say them. But when I'm in Syria, it just becomes what's in my head. And I really like that. It's kind of beautiful. But to your point, Becca, the pressure thing is so right because I would work at my dad's store. He had like a retail store. He still has them. But starting when I was like 14, 15, like every winter break or whatever, those holiday seasons, I'd work retail for him. And a lot of people in SoCal speak Spanish. And so when they are communicating with you and you're like freaking out and there's no one that can help you, you just have to like do it. I don't know. Yeah. Pressure helps, but it's terrifying for sure.
It's so rare because it's almost more about getting over your own head, though, you know, because it's like at the end of the day, the person who's asking you for help is appreciative that you're trying to meet them on their level. But I think as the brown person trying to like get over my own like internalized trauma with my own culture and language, I'm like, but like I have to forget that like they're just asking for the thing and they're really just trying to get help from you. And most people are usually very kind about it. Like once you get over your own shit, they're like, oh, like, yeah, like help me help you. But I did have this issue. My partner is Peruvian. His family doesn't speak English. Like his mom does, but because she's had to, she cleans houses for a living in DC. So she's had to, by nature of her clientele, like learn English, but the rest of his extended family doesn't. And I met them back in September, like in DC. We like went for the weekend and it was just like, it was just like 30 people coming at me in Spanish. Wow. And I'm just like, I'm processing things like 10 minutes behind. Like they're saying something and I like understood it. But then by the time I like had a thought, it was like they have passed that idea at this point. Yeah. And they're just like all giggling at me. They're like, oh my God, she's so cute. Like, look at her. She doesn't know anything we're saying. And I'm like,
Like, it's not cute. It's hurting my feelings.
I know. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like panicked all day. I'm just like, okay, no, no. But I was like, this is important. Like, I honestly need this because I have to get it together. Like, I have to find this out. Yeah. I have to learn Spanish.
Well, our experience with our, like, in quotes, like native or parents' language or whatever, it's so interesting because, especially if you're born here, it's like, you already don't feel XYZ enough, you know? So it's like, it just makes it whole different when you also have trouble communicating well, you know? It's, I don't know. But, okay, this will just go more philosophizing if I keep going. So, Becca, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. It was lovely to get to know you.
Thanks for having me. I'm so glad I could jump on for my first episode with iHeart.
Now they're drilling through my door, so I'm so sorry about all the noise. Oh, I guess I didn't say it at the beginning when I was going to. There's been a lot of noise going on in the background. I apologize. There's work being done on my apartment. I don't have the ability to schedule these things. So thank you again, Becca. Of course, you're stuck with me.
And I'm happy about it. So
I hope this is, boy, Becca's about to learn Becca, you're about to, you may have just heard me on podcast, but you're about to learn that I am a crazy person. And I am bitchy. Not to you, but you'll see. To you, I respect you because I brought you in, so I'll be cool to you. But boy, do I get real bitchy when it comes to Jack and Miles. Because you know what?
I love that.
It's been years. You know? That's the thing. You're witnessing a relationship that three people who started a podcast together who are now still working together and the stakes have gotten higher and like things are just getting tense. And it's like, you know what? Just imagine it's like me, my dad and my brother and we're all fighting. And that's what it's like. And you know what? I didn't want to bring you in and be like, it gets heated sometimes, but you're seeing like a family argument of like, well, I want to do it this way. And they're like, well, I'll fucking kill you. And you're like, oh, okay. You want to play dirty. All right. Well, I stole your kids. You know, like, so like it gets really wild, but it's all love. It's just, you know, shit needs to get done. And
I mean, it's a daily podcast. You talk to them more than anyone else in the world. You know
it's true.
I mean?
You spend like 3 hours a day on call just talking about
yeah. Imagine when we went on tour together. It got to a point, and Jack Miles and I, we have gone to the point where like a lot of our, we have a lot of code talk because we've spent so much time together that we talk about things that just are just nonsense. And we have a lot of bits that are absolute nonsense. And after a while, you start to notice it. You'd be like, we're too deep in, you guys. We're way too deep in.
Like we can't divorce now. We shared too much.
Exactly.
But you get to know people on that level. So you're going to really get folded into the fold. So get ready. You'll also start speaking like us. And you'll start watching too much television and overanalyzing it. And
I mean, I already did that. You know, that's... Yeah. I love. If anything, I bring... I don't like to say I'm Gen Z because I'm technically a millennial, but I do be on TikTok. So I feel like, you know, I'll bring in the pop cultural references that maybe y'all are missing.
Oh, yeah.
And yes. We need a TikTok really person for sure. I need one just in my daily life just to be like, what is this meme from? Please help me.
Yeah, what is this trending from?
Please send it my way. I am too deep on TikTok. Sometimes I have to delete it because I'm like, I have spent too much time on here today. Especially because I deactivated my Instagram recently because I was like, you know what? I want a break from everybody on the internet. Like TikTok doesn't feel like that, you know, because it's like no one I know is on TikTok. Like I'm just watching creators create. It's like Tumblr, but Instagram is like people you know. And I was like, I don't want to talk to people anymore, but now I'm on TikTok twice as much, and that's not healthy. So I gotta find a balance.
By the way, Becca, follow me at TikTok, okay? At Anna Hosnia. Shout out my TikTok account that every once in a while I'll post impressions.
I have one. But I only use it to creep. I think I posted like a few videos like when I first got it like a year ago. But at this point, I rarely open it. And if I do, it's like someone sends me something and then I get into a rabbit hole. You know what I mean? Like something like that.
I will say I try not to open it unless it's deliberate because it's loud. It's like right away, like really loud. And you're like, and if your partner is sleeping, they're like, what are you doing? And you're like, just watching TikTok really loudly.
Yeah, you can't passively watch TikTok. No. Like, you're like, no, we can't be in bed together. Like, I have to consciously be like, okay, I guess it's time to put my phone away. Because, like, I can't be scrolling this while we're trying to sleep.
I guess that's a good thing about it. Like, it really has to be, like, a deliberate viewing experience. Mm-hmm. Because it is, like, short, loud videos that you, like...
You have to engage and pay attention.
Yeah. But that's where you get sucked in. And you're, like, on it. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's, like, 2 a.m. Yeah, and I'm like, I'm in bed on TikTok and I need to... I started setting those timers on your phone, you know?
Yeah.
So then it's, like, I can make myself feel bad every time I click ignore for 15 more minutes. And I'm like,
You know what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're doing. But, Becca, thank you so much. I'm very excited to keep seeing you and working with you.
Yes.
Imagine if this episode went terribly and we were just like...
It's like, we can't have her back on. Yeah. She talks too much.
And I work with Becca. I'm like, uh-oh. She was so
like, killed
too much. Yeah. But yeah, tell everyone, I guess you're not on Instagram, but if you want to be followed anywhere online, plug that away. And if not, have a lovely day.
Yeah, I mean, when I decide to come back to Instagram, it will be, you know, I'm trying to do a dry December, a deactivate December, you know, something cute with an alliteration. Yeah. But when I come back, it is BECCSRAMOS, one word, Bex Ramos. And, you know, my website is beccaramos.com. And I'm not really on Twitter. It's the same as my Instagram, but you're not going to really find anything on there except for like tweets from 2017. And my TikTok is also Bex Ramos, but I use it to creep. So you can follow me, but you're not going to get anything but a couple Megan Thee Stallion dance challenges. So follow as you wish. But that's where I am.
Awesome. Thank you again so much. And let's get out of here. Ready? Okay. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. I'm ShiroHero on Instagram and ShiroHero666 on Twitter.
I'm just at Anna Hosea on Twitter. I just followed Becca. She can't get rid of me.
Got nowhere to go.
And until next time.
You know, stay well, healthy, drink water.
Yeah, drink water. That's good. So, until next time, please drink some water.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.